why we are many. We
high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia. Here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. A minute past the hour, and we begin a whole brand new broadcast week here on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com, America's liberal voice. We call what we do here Conversation Radio, and it's available to you in a multitude of formats, either live or via podcasting. If you're listening live, you might be listening on the White Rose stream. You might be listening on the stream direct from headonradionetwork.com. You might be listening at iTunes Radio. You could be listening at Stitcher. You might be listening at TuneIn Radio or Tuner Internet Radio or any of a host of other internet-based broadcast platforms. And however you are listening, we are glad you are. I'm Bob Kincaid. Did I mention that? Yeah, well, I just kind of take it for granted after a while. I get up and look in the mirror. Morning, Bob. Morning, Bob. Now, I'm Bob, and this is the beginning of the week. I'm back from my road trip. It was rather hasty, but a very good trip all the way around. I had said that Ferg was getting his wisdom teeth extracted today. Well, no. It turns out we were mistaken on that. Instead, what he had was a radical coverage ectomy. Before he can get, you got to pack in two or three good visits so that you can catapult the billing or whatever it is. Right, you understand. So, no, he is not drugged out of his mind, and no, he is not recovering from oral surgery at this point in time, which is good and bad because those wisdom teeth do have to come out. I've seen X-rays. They're in there, and they look like, I don't know, they might just go right through his cheeks and turn into boar tusks or something, but not today. No, not today. So, well, you know. But anyway, welcome to the brand new week, and this should be a relatively ordinary week, I suppose. I'm trying to think if, no, there's nothing out there to interfere with the broadcast schedule for the next 5 days. Next week there will be some interferences. There's a strong likelihood that I will be in Washington, D.C. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week doing some mountaintop removal work. We are trying to raise awareness of the looming, burgeoning healthcare nightmare that is creeping across this region that a lot of people want to pretend doesn't exist. But it does. Oh, Lord God, it sure does. So there may be some interferences with the schedule next week. My apologies. But as I have said before, I can't just sit here and talk about it. I live here. If I'm going to talk the talk, I better, by God, walk the walk. And that's what I'm going to be trying to do. So there you go. Let me say at the beginning of the program here that prior to showtime, I received a very nice piece of correspondence from Jason, who is a listener to the program. He says, mostly we listen in podcasts, seldom listening live. Let me pull the exact post up because it was pretty cool, I thought. Here we go. Yeah, there. And come on. There we go. Yeah, okay. And come on. Oh, here we go. Here we go. I had the wrong place. Jason has set up a $100 challenge. He says he'll match the first 10 $10 Thrifty 250 contributions or whatever combination to add up to a total of $100. So it's a way for you to double your money. Jason says, mostly we're a podcaster and don't listen live, but we enjoy the show. Thanks for all you do for sane people. I think that's the first time I've heard that. Thanks for all you do for sane people. And maybe that's part of the outreach. Keeping sane people that way for almost, something like 8 years or something now. Yeah, it's more than 8 years. But thank you. Thank you, Jason. So the next 10 of you who kick in who kick in a thrifty $2.50 contribution of $10 apiece. Well, you get your money doubled via Jason's challenge. So it's there. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So is the snail mail address, which I'm told I don't give out enough. It is 1038 North Eisenhower, like the President, Drive, PMB, personal mailbox, 318 Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, West Virginia, 25801. And this is how we keep the bills paid. This coming in from Mike from Crazy Repiglick in Texas. Help me, he says. Help me. Well, I hope you had a great road trip. Great to have you back. I'm waiting on today's show, and I can't wait no more. Okay, I'm listening. Have a great trip to D.C. Thanks, Mike. Thanks very kindly. And I think we do have a great show today, or at least a good one, or at least, okay, an interesting one. I feel terribly egomaniacal. Oh, we've got a great show. It's kind of like being at a little radio station and being sent to do the remote down to the used car lot. Oh, Bill, there's a lot going on down here. No, there isn't. But we do. Because I think this may be a very, very special Moran Monday. Because, it is Moran Monday, right? It is. That's right. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. It's Moran Monday on the horn. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. On the ordinary Moran Monday, we have behind us a thin cybernetic veil of canvas, and behind which reside all manner of right-wing freaks. Hateful right-wing freaks, funny right-wing freaks, dangerous right-wing freaks, deadly right-wing freaks, male right-wing freaks, female right-wing freaks, right-wing freaks of all stripe and persuasion. That's right. Moran Monday on the horn is a veritable cornucopia of Moranity. But not this evening, friends and neighbors, not this evening. No, this is a very special Moran Monday. It may be the first in the history of the horn. For the small, slim, tiny, itsy bitsy, barely consequential price of less than 5 cents per hour of programming here on the horn, you are going to experience this evening Moranity in singular, and yet, Moranity writ large. That's right, it's a single topic. It is a single Moran Monday. We've never done this before, friends and neighbors. We may never do it again. It may be too horrible to contemplate, but we're going to have a run at it this evening, in addition to your nominations. But behind this thin, cybernetic veil of canvas, if you will but look, if you have the stomach to listen, if you have the courage to deal with it, we have one Moran seated in a chair, babbling, screaming, screeching, scratching himself, picking at things, losing what passes for a mind between the ears of a Moran. It is a single Moran Monday on the horn. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Moran.
What do I mean?
Well, I just, even though I was on the road, I try to pay attention to what's going on in life, and I was struck over the course of the weekend and coming into today as well by the fact that I had never seen such a run of Moranity in all the years of doing this. This is the damnedest thing I've ever run across. I not even with Mussolini, not even with that woman who's married to that guy who rides lions through Narnia. No, not with none of them. Not even with dim leader George W. Bush have I ever seen. Not even with Dr. Newton, Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, have we seen such a concentrated run of stupid and hateful and pig-eyed and mean and nasty and vile and right-wing and fascist. And did I mention stupid and moron? Yeah, I think we did, but the three mentions okay. I'm talking, of course, friends and neighbors,
about not just any Moran, but the frothy Moran. The Moran comprised of a frothy mixture, and you can look up the rest of the phrase. I am talking about Santorum the Moran. Because I've got like 4, 5, 6, maybe? Moran, the potential nominations coming from just one ignorant, religiously insane, right-wing Republican, just one? It's almost like some sort of black hole or neutron star of Moranity that's just sucking up Moranity until it's just vectoring and vortexing around it, this perfect storm of Moran. I suppose we shouldn't be surprised to see that it's coming from the likes of the frothy one. But golly Moses, he outdid himself this weekend, didn't he? Holy mackerel! There's something here in this right-wing Moranity of the frothy mixture for everyone. He's touched on environmental concerns. He's touched on education. It has been like some sort of upper room outpouring of the Moran spirit. He was practically rolling on the floor and babbling in tongues. You know where it begins. It begins with, of course, and this isn't Wednesday, and I'm not making a Wednesday kind of thing, but it can't help but begin with religion. I always wondered what it felt like to be excommunicated, and now I guess I know. Even though I'm not a participant, no. But my name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life, because I was done baptized when I was 12, and you know, us Baptists, we say, once saved, always saved. Well, I don't quite know what to make of this, but you know, Rick Santorum, the frothy mixture, Bro-Fro-Mix, as our buddy Michael Kid A dubbed him, has a real hankering for like the 11th century, when the way you dealt with heretics was to give them a good burning at the stake, and that'll show them. Yeah. Nail some sense into them, right? And apparently this is something that came out over the weekend. It was caught by the genius folks over at Right Wing Watch. And even if you're not religiously inclined, which I'm not, this is still a little bit shocking for somebody who claims to be all full of the grace and forgiveness of the Lord Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ. Well, just listen for yourself. This is where Moran Monday here beginneth the lesson.
The next was the church. Now you say, well, wait, the Catholic Church? No. We all know that this country was founded on a Judeo-Christian ethic, but the Judeo-Christian ethic was a Protestant Judeo-Christian ethic. Sure, the Catholics had some influence, but this was a Protestant country, and the Protestant ethic, mainstream, mainline Protestantism. And of course, we look at the shape of mainline Protestantism in this country, and it is a shambles. It is gone from the world of Christianity, as I see it. And so they attacked mainline Protestantism. They attacked the church. And what better way to go after smart people who are also believe they're pious, and to use both vanity and pride to go after the church. After that, you start destroying the church and you start destroying academia. The culture is where their next success was. And I need not even go into the state of the popular culture today. But whether it's sensuality or vanity of the famous in America, they are peacocks on display. And they have taken their poor behavior and made it fashionable. The corruption of culture, the corruption of manners, the corruption of decency is now on display, whether it's the NBA or whether it's a rock concert or whether it's on a movie set.
There you go. Episcopalians, Lutherans, Presbyterians, non-Southern Baptists, decent upstanding Methodists, you're out. You heard it. You are gone from the world of Christianity. I cast you out. I don't know if there were broken candles involved or people crawling around in hair shirts or anything, but the frothy mixture says he knows what a Christian, you're not one. This is a matter of channeling the 11th century. But that's not all, of course. No, this is like I said. The audio was kind of low, wasn't it? Sorry. Well, basically, he says that Christianity is gone from Protestantism in America. That we've all been perverted by rock stars and the NBA and people on movie sets. Yeah, I mean, well, you, me, we, a lot of us, we were already going straight into God's little toaster of love for all eternity anyway, because that's how much God loves us, is he loves us so much that he wants to make sure that we burn in an eternal lake of fire for all eternity. Yay, God! But it's going to come as a real surprise to the Presbyterians and the Methodists and the Lutherans and the Episcopals and all those other respectable Protestant sects. They're going to be right there in the toaster with us. You done yet? Feeling a little warm here. Yeah, you're right there with us. Because Rick Santorum done said you are. And he would know because he's more holy and pious than you. He's a better Christian because he takes purple lizards home to play with them with his children after having induced an abortion in the body of his wife while arguing that nobody else can have one. You know. But then it only gets better. Because on in Columbus, on February the 18th, which was 2 days ago, Saturday, probably along about the time I was sitting down to a righteous good bowl of gumbo, Santorum was talking to a group of the faithful. Here's hoping there were no sharp objects in the room. He took it upon himself to describe the president's agenda. All these agendas out there flying around, and I've never seen a darn one of them. But anyway, speaking to the faithful, Rick Santorum said, his agenda is not about you. It's not about you. It's not about your quality of life. It's not about your job. It's about some phony ideal, some phony theology. Oh, not a theology based on the Bible, a different theology, but no less a theology. In other words, he just breathed fresh life into the blood libel that Barack Obama is some sort of secret Muslim, because he's got a phony theology. It's a theology, but it's not the right theology. It's not a good theology. It's that other theology. Yeah, I just, somehow or another, I don't think that Santorum was nodding and nudging and winking in reference to animism or Jainism or Zen Buddhism. Because everybody knows that, yeah, that he's a phony Christian, not the right kind of Christian. You ready for a religious war? Those are especially fun wars because nobody's safe in a religious war except the ones who think they have power. And Rick Santorum is all ready for one. You can either come on over and get all pre-Vatican II Roman Catholic with him, or you're screwed. This is just... I mean, if there is to be any value to the First Amendment whatsoever, and, you know, they've spent a week or so having a hissy about the First Amendment and their rights to be bigots under the First Amendment, trumping the rest of our rights to be normal. But this one sort of took it to new places. Phony theology. And yet, of course, the Johnny on the spot, ever ready, doesn't miss a lick, for-profit 1% media, didn't quite get around to finding out, because, you know, he won't say what the phony theology is. But everybody who with a dog whistling decoder ring knows that that's shorthand for he's a secret Muslim with a deep-seated hatred of white people who has an anti-colonialist right, all of that. You see now why I said this was kind of looking like an all Santorum Moran Monday? And this is the flavor of the moment right now in America. But see, there is a problem. Because even Mayella and Joe Bob don't want to necessarily make a baby every time they, because, you know, what's that old Italian proverb or saying or aphorism or whatever? Bed is the poor man's opera. Because you've got it all right there, but it doesn't cost you a bunch of money to get through the door. As long as you can muster up a hormone or two, it's all right there for you and your lovely spouse and your handsome spouse, as the case may be. But Rick Santorum wants there to be a baby every time you do that. But even down here behind the cornbread curtain, Joe Bob and Miss Mayeller, they don't necessarily want it to be that way. And if they ever get wind of the fact that Rick Santorum's just about tired of them being Baptists or Methodists or First Temple of Holiness and Herpetological, right. By the way, on the way home, I had one of those teachable moments with Ferg. We had a great trip. He was an absolute joy to travel with all the way down and all the way back, and we drove home like the devil himself was at our heels, because all we heard for about the minute we got where we were going till we got back was that the storm of the century was on the way, and it was going to drop 8 to 152 inches of snow on us. And so we drove with real purpose getting home. But it was Sunday, and coming home through the wilds of a very rural chunk of Kentucky, I turned on the radio. Because Ferg had been wanting to... he gets a song in his head, and he just wants to listen to it over and over again. And that was the only downside to traveling with Ferg, is he wanted to listen to it. There was about four songs, and that's all he wanted to listen to. And no, I can't do that, because I've got an MP3 player in my head that's... I can't even turn on classic hits rock and roll radio because all the songs are already there. I can hear two whacks of the cymbal and know that it's going to be Jesus Is Just All Right. You know, one downstroke of the guitar, and I know that I'm dealing with the Steve Miller Band or Chicago or whatever. And so I turned on the AM radio because I knew where we were, I knew what time it was, and I knew what was going to be coming through the speakers. And I told him I wish there'd been some way for me to record it and bring it with me, because a lot of y'all on Wednesday night, when I fire up Wednesday night prayer meeting and start hooting and hollering around, y'all think I'm just funning. Y'all think I'm painting some sort of broad brush caricature of religion. I'm not. That guy you hear on Wednesdays is pretty dang mild by comparison. And so, you know, just you hit the scan button a couple of times, and the next thing you know, thank you for joining us, brethren and sisters, and we're sending out today's broadcast to Sister May Ellen. She's getting over a bad bout of the lumbago, and we're all going to be lifting her up in prayer this evening. And brother Frank is going to come and deliver to us the word of wisdom for the. And at first, Ferg was like, "Come on, Dad, turn it, Dad." No. Let's listen. And Sister Sue Jean come on with her guitar and her dog whistle or whatever, and played a few off key bars of "Drop Kick Me Jesus Through the Goalposts of Life" and we shall walk upon the waves and And I was paying attention to driving, being how I was driving and everything, but I begun to just sort of watch Ferg out of the corner of my eye. And he pretty quickly went from, "Dear God, turn this off," to a sort of slack-jawed fascination. And after a little bit, I looked at him and said, "Still want to turn it?" He said, "Don't you touch that button." And all of a sudden, the light of recognition went on in his eyes. And we had this great conversation about how, no matter how loony it seems to us, that's the kind of faith that has supported a profoundly oppressed Appalachian people for literally generations. That it is embodied in the recognition that everything here is a veil of sorrows and misery, and that it will hopefully be made better in the next life. It's a hell of a bargain, but it's all they have. And we listened to probably something on the order of an hour, hour and a half of this, because it was downright anthropological. And the conversation we had was excellent. And I got to think that Sister Ellen Sue and brother Frank, even in the buckle of the Bible Belt holiness that is central, verging into eastern Kentucky, where they haven't elected a Democrat since the Buchanan administration, I got to think that being told by a rich Roman Catholic that they're really not Christians is not going to play well. You know, you don't know who Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist and aquabuddhist, is supporting, and you don't know who Senator Chinless Mitch McConnell is supporting, but if either one of them are supporting Frothy, you can bet your ass that the phone has been picked up. Son, we want it to work for you here, but you're going to have to Lay off the Otnay and Ischen cray if you ever want another damn Otvay to be asked K for you in Kentucky K. Okay? Got it, Rick? The folks down to the Holiness Tabernacle don't like being told that Jesus don't like them, considering Jesus is all they got. Now, we got them voting against their own interests. We got them voting for us. We got them voting for having their land poisoned. We got them voting for having their air poisoned. We got them voting for having their water poisoned. We got them voting for having their babies poisoned. We got them voting for having their bodies poisoned. We got them voting for the miseries that beset them that they spend 15 minutes sending out prayer cards to at the beginning of every broadcast that they pay for with the pennies they get passing the plate. And we don't need you, Rick, coming along through here and telling them they ain't Christian like you are. Daggone it, Ricky. Ain't we told you how they feel about you papists in the first place? Apparently, it didn't take. Now, meanwhile, I guess the explanations have gone out. David in Tennessee noting, now, Bob, Fox News has done splained that phony theology quip. Steve Ducey said it related to worldview. So there, Smarty Bob, neener, neener, neener. Steve Ducey done fixed it. Yeah, you know, Jim makes an interesting point. He just says, in memory of John F. Kennedy, who made no effort to use his faith as a weapon on this President's Day. Well, by gum, Ricky Santorum will. He's made it clear. It was just dumb in 1960 when, well, if we elect the Catholic president, is he going to take all his orders from the Pope? And John Kennedy actually had to come to the hills and hollers of West Virginia and pass out pint bottles of liquor and explain to people over shots of hooch that, no, he'd make his decisions based upon the law and the Constitution and what he thought was right. And down here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Virginia, them good old boys say, well, that's good enough for me, and this ain't bad liquor. You cannot say the same thing about the frothy mixture. Because he is a toe in the mark and means for you to know it and means for you to understand that you best be toeing it too, or, as he has done said, you ain't no Christian. Now, they had to do some serious backpedaling thereafter as a spokes creep for the frothy one, National Communications Director Hogan Gidley. Damn, sounds like a bubble in a bathtub. Offered the following. The president says he's a Christian, and Rick believes that, and has even said so publicly many times. Rick was talking about the president's belief in the secular theology of government, and how believing that theology is dangerous because government theology teaches that it's perfectly fine to take away our individual God-given rights and freedoms. Our founders wrote the Constitution to protect our individual rights and freedoms, but it's clear that President Obama believes the government should control your life. Rick Santorum believes in the Constitution will always fight to protect our freedoms. That's word salad. That's gobbledygook. It's kind of like when we were toddling up the highway and Ferg got to listening in to Brother Frank when he was bringing the message, which done come from the Book of Psalms and the book of Philippians. And he heard it, and he started out kind of meek and mousy, and I said, just wait, son. He's going to get worked up. He's going to wind it up. He's going to get going. And pretty soon, he was a gasping and a amening and a hacking and a glory and all of that. And the congregation, amen, amen,
Hallelujah. What a day it'll be. And he was flying along, and in the middle of it, Ferg looks over at me and says, Dad, this doesn't make a lick of sense. I said, how do you mean? He said, it's nothing but emotion. He's just babbling whatever comes out of his mouth. I said, son, the phrase you're looking for is stream of consciousness. He says, that means he says whatever comes to his mind and hollers amen after. I said, that's exactly what it means. And that's what you get there from, what was this goober's name again? National Communications Director Hogan Gidley. Hogan. But that ain't all. We ain't done. This is a no-kidding, sure-fire, no two ways around it, frothy Moran Monday, the first of its kind ever to be dominated by a single right-wing Moran. It takes a lot of Moran energy, a lot of Moran power to be doing something like that, and we have never seen it before, but now we have. So there on MSNBC, Andrea Mitchell has frothy spokeswoman Alice Stewart on. And she said the following. Here we go.
And for more on this, I am joined by Alice Stewart, National Press Secretary for the Santorum Campaign. Alice, great to see you. Thanks for coming on. I know the candidate is talking about the economy. I know he is in...
That is, as we say in the House, in the South, rather, one handsome woman. You want a sugar cube, honey? Sorry, I'll get letters.
Michigan, and you've had a big debate with Mitt Romney over the auto bailout and the like. But you've got to acknowledge that the media is looking at Rick Santorum as he is now the front runner. Let me play a little bit more of Robert Gibbs and the Obama campaign's response yesterday.
It's just time to get rid of this mindset in our politics, that if we disagree, we have to question character and faith.
The question is, when Rick Santorum disagrees with President Obama profoundly, why make it an issue of values and an issue of, quote, theology? Why is that the best way to debate the issues rather than say we disagree about a bailout?
Oh, here it comes. Here it comes. Somebody get Hogan Gridley on the phone. Hogan.
We disagree about economics. We disagree about taxes.
Well, certainly, Rick has said it. We've all said it before. Robert Gibbs took it out of context. He wasn't questioning.
Well, of course. It was out of context. It's always out of context. Ah, you got that? Damn it, we read the quote out. It ain't out of context. It's not like, no, he wasn't discussing the finer point of second flip-floppy. No!
The president's character. He wasn't questioning the president's religion. As he said, as he's clarified this statement, he was talking about radical environmentalists. He was talking about it. There is a type of theological secularism when it comes to the global warmness in this country. That's what he was referring to. He was referring to the president's policies in terms of the radical Islamic policies the president has, and specifically in terms of...
Dr. Freud. Oh, Dr. Freud! His radical Islamic policies, radical Islamic environmental policy, so am I to understand we got Sharia mountaintop removal going on around? Yeah.
In terms of the energy exploration, case in point, the Keystone Pipeline.
Wait, we got to back this up some.
Robert Gibbs took it out of context. He wasn't questioning the president's character. He wasn't questioning the president's religion. As he said, as he's clarified this statement, he was talking about radical environmentalists. He was talking about it. There is a type of theological secularism when it comes to the global warmness in this country. That's what he was referring to. He was referring to the president's policies in terms of the radical Islamic policies the president has, and specifically in terms of the energy exploration. Case in point, the Keystone Pipeline. Here's radical environmentalist policies caused him to nix a program that would help energy exploration and create jobs in this country, and that is key to helping with the gas prices in this country as well as job creation. And what he's going to see is the gas prices continue to rise, his popularity is going to go down with it. And the Keystone Pipeline is one case in point that is directly attributed to the to those statements. And Rick made a great op-ed that's in the Detroit News Press where he outlines the president's policies are not working. And Rick has great ideas in terms of creating jobs in the economy, and he presented that in Michigan and will continue to do so. It's about bottoms up, free people.
Bottoms up. Rick Santorum's responses to the radical Islamic environmental policies of President Barack Hussein Obama is bottoms up ideas. I'm gonna get me some religion. I'm gonna build the first tabernacle to the God of Irony. It's gonna have them funny mirrors out of a carnival funhouse that makes you look all kinds of different shapes when you walk through, and I don't know, every seat and every pew is gonna have a whoopee cushion under it, so that it'll sound like one big fart when you sit down, and people will holler, "Praise the God of Irony!" Right? Bottoms up. Really, Alice?
Popularity is going to go down with it, and the Keystone Pipeline is one case in point that is directly attributed to the to those statements. And Rick made a great op-ed that's in the Detroit News Press where he outlines.
Has she been studying at the Sarah Palin School of Public Speaking?
The president's policies are not working. And Rick has great ideas in terms of creating jobs in the economy, and he presented that in Michigan and will continue to do so. It's about bottoms up, free people, free market policies that will help create jobs and turn the economy around.
Dang, I didn't get the clip where Andrea said, "Really, honey? Radical Islamic policies?" Although Hogan was called into Colonel Klink's office for a quick explanation. Communications Director Hogan Gridley told TPM that Alice Stewart had misspoke. Because, see, it's so much easier to say that she was taken out of context or that she had misspoke. That she had misspoke. Than it is to try to explain the dynamics of Freudian slips and things like that. Right. Wouldn't you pay good money to have been a fly on that wall? Alice! Alice! Oh, one of these days, Alice! Because, you know, they can say things like that over in the Santorum camp because women were not intended by Almighty God to be president, and women are to be subordinate to men. Folk, the men, women folk got to wear a little bonnet or a little nun suit or something and say yaza massa every time the men folk say to do something. If man folk says froggy, women folk got to say how high. Alice, why did you let the cat out of the bag? We agreed we weren't going to talk about the Islamic policies till we got down to Mississippi, Stan. Not on a heathen communist network like MSNBC, Alice. Dumb old woman. Been all downhill ever since Eve took that first bite of the kumquat. It was a kumquat, you know. But that ain't all. Nope. As we were wrapping things up on Thursday night, the frothy one was in Idaho. He'd been in Idaho a couple of days before. And he's all upset about the... well, I guess it's part of that phony theology, right? Yeah. There's a lot of land out there that's land that can and should be managed by stewards who care about that land. I believe the land is there to serve man, not man there to serve the land. If we turn that, obviously, Bureau of Land Management, they just don't look. We're not going to have the resources to manage this land correctly. Federal government doesn't care about it. They don't care about this land. They don't live here. They don't care about it. We don't care about it in Washington. It's just flyover country for most of the bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. We need to get it back into the hands of the states and even to the private sector, and we can make money doing it, and we can make money doing it but sell it. So I believe that's critically important. There's a lot of land out there that is land. Did you notice that word steward? That is dominionist code. We are to be stewards of the land and take dominion over it. But it just keeps getting better. The frothy one addressed a full to the rafters First Redeemer Church in Cumming, Georgia. No, really. I mean, honest to God, I'm going to set up the horn as a religious institution. It is going to be the first church of the omnipotently ironic, and we're going to recognize little miracles all over the place. Because the frothy one, the man who thinks that two people of the same gender who happen to love each other and want to spend their lives together is the same as bestiality, you know, man on dog Santorum, yeah, he delivered a speech to a packed church in Cumming, Georgia. Man, that is proof of the existence of a divinely hilarious deity. And remember how Michelle Bachmann used to like to do American history? Well, apparently, if I understand correctly, it turns out, as Jude and Patty are both pointing out here, that Alice Stewart, the one who was talking about Obama's radical Islamic environmental policies, she's a former press aide to Michelle Bachmann and Mike Huckabee. Patty said, I just knew I'd done sawed Miss Alice somewheres before. Santorum campaign hires former Bachmann press secretary Alice Stewart. And Fritz reminds us that Bro Fromix's press secretary Alice Stewart once worked for former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee. Prior to that, Stewart was a weekend news anchor for KARK-TV, NBC affiliate for Little Rock, Arkansas. More recently, prior to working for Michelle Bachmann and now Santorum, Stewart was one of the staff of Arkansas Secretary of State Mark Martin. Yes, that's the guy's name, same name as that famous NASCAR driver, and left there under some pressure. Pressed down and shaken together. This man who has surged from behind, Rick Santorum, was speaking in Cumming, Georgia, and, he had this to say.
But now the man of the hour is Santorum, and he is getting huge crowds and a lot of enthusiasm. Last night in Georgia, thousands of people came to hear him speak, and he talked about what's at stake in the election. He said America was facing challenges just as it did in World War II. Listen to what he had to say here.
Our closest ally, Britain, was being bombed and leveled. Japan was spreading its cancer all throughout Southeast Asia. And America sat from 1940 when France fell in December of 41. It did almost nothing. Why? Because we're a hopeful people. We think, well, you know, it'll get better. Yeah, he's a nice guy. I mean, it won't be near as bad as what we think. I mean, you know, this will be okay. I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, maybe he's not the best guy after a while. You found out some things about this guy over in Europe, but he's not so good of a guy after all. But you know what? Why do we need to be involved? We'll just take care of our own problems. Just get our families off to work, get our kids off to school, and we'll be okay. That's sort of the optimistic spirit of America, but sometimes, it's not okay.
So you got that? Yeah. That, of course, was a clip from CBS News. Did you notice the comparison there? This was a discussion about, of course, why he wants to be president and replace President Barack Obama, whom he, in that clip, compared, no, really, to Adolf Hitler. Saying that the reason we didn't enter the war before December the 7th, 1941, was because we were sitting around being optimistic Americans looking at Hitler and saying, well, you know, he seems like a nice guy. And to a certain extent, he has a point, the frothy one does. Yeah, he's a nice guy, that Hitler, that Mr. Hitler. We did have people in this country who thought that. They were, by and large, Republicans. It was Republicans who, time after time, advanced an isolationist policy that said, who cares what happens to Europe? Let it burn. You know, just like they said the same thing about the auto industry in the United States. Burn, baby, burn. Let the free market take care of it. And just as it was the case with Michelle Bachmann and her story of the troop transport Dorchester, where time after time she referred to it in speech after speech as having been sunk by a U-2 boat... So, too, the frothy one has been working this corner before for a while. It was 2005 when he was a senator. And he compared Senate Democrats to, well, this is the quote, it's the equivalent of Adolf Hitler in 1942. I'm in Paris. How dare you invade me? How dare you bomb my city? It's mine. And this is the price we pay for a populace that has been dumbed down over the course of a generation. Because you can say things like, we didn't get into the Second World War because a bunch of people optimistically thought Hitler was a nice guy. Are you getting the idea? David in Tennessee noting, he says, yeah, I can hear that phone call now, Bob. Chinless Mitch. Ricky, damn it, Ricky, get off this business of de-chumping our chumps. David with the question, let's see now. Bro Fromix becomes president. You reckon that'd embolden Fat Tony Scalia? Let that roll around the logic track, tweets the ears. Yes. Wouldn't it be fun to have another hair shirt, barbed wire around the leg, wearing radical Opus Dei creep on the Supreme Court? You know, because Barack Obama's just like George W. Bush. Maybe worse. Yeah, that's going to be lovely. Yeah, that wasn't lost on Jim either. France fell when? 1941? Don't think so. June 1940, I think. Andy asking, what are you kidding me? GM just had record earnings and is back to big-time hiring. Much of the government's investment in the auto industry has been paid back, so Mr. Obama's Detroit policies were a failure. Please, you get rid of top management, CEO Rick Wagner, and his cadre of failed executives, and you pave the road to success. Steve Rattner, Obama's man in Detroit, provided oversight, did a nice job of moving GM from a producer of gas-guzzling SUVs, all-terrain vehicles, and light trucks to fuel-economy vehicles. They're even producing a fairly good electric car, the Volt, which, of course, under the failed Wagoner regime, they canned. Who killed the electric car fame? The electric car was and would have been a great success years ago had GM's management been enlightened. The key, when you do a bailout, you also have to replace top management. Yeah, there we go. And by the way, we have very, very happy reviews of the Volt coming in from our dear friends Ray and Kim, who have taken it all the way from Michigan to Florida, and quite successfully, I might add. I think at one point they noted they were getting something on the order of 98 miles a gallon. Jack in Shreveport also noticed something in Alice. What was Alice's last name? Alice Stewart. Jack noticed another phrase in her word salad. Another phrase the handsome woman said. Woman's usage of the words theological secularism kind of bothered me as it spewed out of her stream of unconsciousness. Yeah, I know. That's like, what? Theological secularism. That does, well, I'm hard pressed to come up with the analogy. One of you will do nicely. But that's a total nonsense phrase. Theological secularism. That's like fat-free butterism. Greaseless lardism. There, I knew I'd get it. Ron and Raleigh noting that, right. And that frothy horse's ass didn't say black people either. No. Taken out of context is what that was. Ron also says, come on now, Bob. Aren't you taking poor Rick out of context again? He didn't really say Hitler, so that's not what he meant, right? Yeah, right, because he was talking about Himmler, Goebbels, Goering, Hess, somebody. Now, Bob, says David in Tennessee, y'all need to lighten up on Bro Fro Mix's generation. Re their grasp of America and world history. You got to factor in they learnt their history from a guy in a cheap cowboy hat on a show sponsored by 20 Mule Team Borax. Oh! You see now why I said this felt like it was going to be a one-man band? For Moran Monday? Jim wondering, maybe he'll sell indulgences as a form of campaign contribution for remission of sins. Well, that would be a very 12th century thing for him to do, Jim. John Fox with a stirring lyric. And you stare at me in your Jesus Christ pose, arms held out like you've been carrying a load, and you swear to me you don't want to be my slave, but you're staring at me like I need to be saved in your Jesus Christ pose, arms held out in your Jesus Christ pose. Thorns and shrouds like it's the coming of the Lord, and I swear to you that I would never feed you pain, but you're staring at me like I'm driving the nails. Arms held out like it's the coming of the Lord, and would it pay you more to walk on water than to wear a crown of thorns? It wouldn't pain me more to bury you rich than to bury you poor in your Jesus Christ pose. Yeah. They do that whole martyring thing real good-like, don't they? Mercy sakes. Mule Team Borax. It's the 20 Mule Team Borax History Hour with Ronald Reagan and a monkey. We were driving past the Keeneland racetrack, and I was explaining some of the finer points of horse racing to Ferg. And I said, personally, I think horse racing would be a lot more fun if they put a monkey, you know, they put the jockey on the horse, and then we need to put a monkey on the jockey. And the monkey whips the jockey, and the jockey whips the horse. Be a lot less whipping going on if the jockey was getting whipped first. I'm all about cutting down on animal cruelty, you understand. What a moron Monday. It's absolutely mind-boggling. And by the way, we've got it all backwards. We're not supposed to take care of the land because there'll be little God miracles that'll keep us from being poisoned. But you know, I'd like for the frothy one to move his sacred family down to where maybe, well, it'd be a hell of a thing to ask of my buddy Bo Webb. But maybe he needs to move down where Bo lives, right under a mountaintop removal operation. See how long it is for them sacred little babies start getting sick, and then see if maybe any of that stewardship and dominion horse shit begins to self moderate just a little bit. Yeah. Because we're sick and getting sicker here. And Rick Santorum thinks theological secularism is a problem. Honest to God, how can you be so-called pro-life and a devoted friend of the coal industry at the same time? I don't know. A little something for you right now. A very well thought of American roots band by the name of Magnolia Mountain. They've come out with a new tune. It's called The Hand of Man. Almost seems to be writ with the frothy one in mind. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. We've got and thank you very kindly. We've got our first matching contribution to Jason's challenge. Jay and Barb saying, thanks, Bob. Thanks, Jason. Getting the week off to a good start despite Santorum. Let's hope we can keep the Santorum off our shoes. It is much appreciated. And that means that we've only got 8 more slots to fill to meet Jason's challenge. So we'll take a little break and come back to your phone calls. Things have been kind of hectic. I am working on getting the toll-free service back. I hope that's not holding a lot of you back in calling the program. But you know, for now, the direct dial number is 304-658-3333. Email, of course, comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B, K-I-N-C-A-I-D. And a reminder, with regard to meeting Jason's challenge, if you want to make sure that none of your contribution is eaten up in transfer fees, simply log into PayPal, log into your PayPal account, and do the send to bobkincaid@gmail.com, which is the address that's associated with the email, with the PayPal button anyway, but select personal and gift, and that will keep fees from being pulled out. In case that's a bother for you. At any rate, we'll be right back. Light the phones up. It's Moran Monday on the Horn.
Thank you. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past the hour, and it's Moran Monday on the horn. Powerful music, huh? Magnolia Mountain. The Hand of Man. And you see, the reason I bring that up is because that's directly at odds with things that the frothy one says, like, well, we need these jobs. I remember years ago when John Fox, back when he was hosting All Foxed Up, got taken in the spirit and done come a little unglued behind the Mikey phone and said, what's it going to take for them to figure this out? No planet, no economy. No planet, no jobs. No planet, no people. And I suppose the question still obtains, doesn't it? How are we supposed to have jobs here when, as Magnolia Mountain out of Cincinnati writes, White Star Holler was my home, shared the crops that we had grown, shared the water from our well, shared the life we loved so well. Coal men brought the mountain down, leaked their poison underground. Mother, neighbor, friend, and son, cancer took them, every one. And that's not just artistic license. That's Holler reality in Central Appalachia's sacrifice zone. They sing, they say our nation needs our coal and that is worth our lives and homes. We have no wealth, we have no voice, we have no power and no choice. 'Twas the hand of man brought a mountain down. Oh, the hand of man brought a mountain down. Thank you very kindly, Brandon. Initiated a challenge of his own last week and has kicked in to meet Jason's challenge this evening. Thank you. Three slots down, seven to go in the Thrifty 250. Jim noting, I predict that another international crisis in late summer will occur, engineered by the Republicans as it was in 1979. Think about it. It isn't past them, and we may well be on the way. The Iranian hand-wringing and carrying on seems to have no bottom. And, of course, with the boycott that came through, and Iran said, neener, neener, boycott us in summer, screw you, we're going to quit selling to you right now. That crisis, Jim, that crisis may come before anything resembling summer Don't be surprised. No, it's Moran Monday on the horn, and while we've got a couple of other nominees. And our buddy David in South Carolina offered up a couple from behind the cornbread curtain. And they're impossible. They are impossible to ignore. David said, two nominations. A gun went off accidentally and shot a woman in the leg at Inlet Square. By the way, it's only fair to update you. I guess it was this time last week when we were talking about the father of the lovely 20-year-old young woman at the Grace something or other church in Florida, who had been shot in the head by their security guard, who it turns out was showing off his pistol for purposes of potential sale in a closet at the church, when he pulled the trigger, and the young woman has died. Perhaps mercifully so. But in the same vein, vein's probably a bad word, this from David in South Carolina. A gun went off accidentally and shot a woman in the leg at Inlet Square Mall in Murrells Inlet just after 12:30 p.m. Tuesday. It happened just outside of where a veteran pinning ceremony was about to start at the Veteran Services Fair being held at the mall. The woman volunteers with the Honor Flight Program that raises money to send World War II veterans to Washington, D.C. to see their memorial. The woman was bandaged up in the mall. Police say her injuries do not seem to be life-threatening. Thank heaven for small favors. The bullet entered through the woman's right leg, went clean through, and entered the left leg. Police are questioning a different woman in connection with the shooting. They don't know yet if any charges will be filed. Well, it's South Carolina, Stan, so I wouldn't bet on it. And then this, also from South Carolina, Stan. This just happened yesterday. Authorities say a woman is recovering after she was accidentally shot by a deputy during a concealed weapons class in Chesney, South Carolina. Deputies say an instructor was showing a student the right way to hold her .22 caliber pistol Saturday when the gun fired, hitting the student next to her. Crystal Smith was taken to a hospital and treated for shots to her arm and side. Shots? Spartanburg County Sheriff Chuck Wright says she will recover. Well, thank you, Dr. Sheriff. Deputy Calvin Smith is certified to teach the classes by State Law Enforcement Division. Deputies say the pistol wasn't secured before the instructor started helping the student. Wright says Deputy Smith didn't know the gun was loaded, but should have checked. Wright is outspoken in his comments that women should get concealed weapons permits for protection. Morans, morans everywhere. Oh, and by the way, completely outside the scope of the program, condolences going out to our good friend Ibid from Down Under. He said, "My dad passed away last night. I recall many times you spoke fondly of your father and what it felt like when he passed." Ibid says, "I understand now. And our hearts and my heart go out to you, Ibid. It is a painful thing, and we share to the ability that we can and have that ability we share in your loss and your sadness. Be well and know that all over the planet, Ibid, there are people who love you. That's comforting, I hope. It was for me at that time." Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Bob, my condolences as well.
Thank you, Jim.
You know, I don't understand this business about the closet situation in the church.
It's incomprehensible.
Well, I mean, I can understand entering into a closet to pray.
That's what the Bible says there. Yeah.
But not to display firearms.
Well, it was a Ruger semi-automatic 9mm pistol. The clip was out, and it still had one in the chamber, which apparently will still fire.
Oh, yeah.
I guess that's considered some sort of an off-duty gun or an emergency piece or backup or something like that. I groaned when I read that part because that's how I lost my brother. And it, too, was a Ruger semi-automatic, and it, too, had the clip out and one in the chamber. And
mm-hmm. Well, that's the way the guns you have to be very careful.
But in this sense, in church, really?
No.
and for purposes of making a sale.
Well, like I think I said to you last week, I mean, what do they need to have outside the church? Some type of sign beneath the order of service? Use of deadly force authorized?
In Florida? Sure.
What I don't understand is why are these people all of a sudden so possessed by the idea that it's Dodge City?
Well, that's the thing. There are parts of Florida where it is Dodge City because they've got that lunatic NRA-driven law that says if you are frightened of someone, you have the right to blow them away. Breathtaking, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to reply to that. I mean, you know, there are a lot of things that scare me, but... well, I'm not going to get into that, but I mean, the way these people are projecting the use of firearms is making of this country an armed camp. And half these people who have these shoulder holsters and these firearms and whatever, they shouldn't be carrying them. They shouldn't be authorized to carry them.
No.
Because, I mean, they don't have the wherewithal to have that authority. And basically, when you carry a concealed weapon like that, you are presuming authority.
Mm-hmm.
And when you presume that type of authority, and when someone says something that makes you angry, well, instead of saying angry, I got scared. And I thought this person, because he disagreed with me, was going to take it upon himself to hurt me. And that just gives them all types of license, doesn't it?
And it is an absolute affirmative defense in the state of Florida. I killed him, but.
That's the craziest damn thing I've ever heard in my life.
And Well, I imagine you've got no Florida trips planned for the immediate future, do you, Jim?
No, as a matter of fact, I was offered a job at Patrick Air Force Base with Defense Equal Opportunity Management Institute, and not liking a lot of heat and bugs and stuff like that, plus I considered the way Florida was going, I just said, no, thank you.
Probably a wise choice in the long run.
Well, you know, it was either that or retirement, and I said, you know, I've had enough of this, and I don't need to have to go down to a state that's going to be threatened by hurricanes 6 months out of the year. There's people with crazy ideologues to have to worry about. You know, it's just, I mean, well, South Carolina was enough for me as far as some of the stuff I had to experience down there. And I just don't know. I don't understand this, and I don't understand why these people are trying to use, you know, religion as some type of weapon. That's exactly what they're doing, the Santorum.
Well, and that's the thing, Jim. Take this, you know, don't take these as isolated little incidents, because that when they're isolated incidents, they don't make any sense. But if you take an armed right-wing segment of the pop, of the electorate and the population, and you combine that with political candidates who are claiming that religion is threatened by that one, and you wrap it up with some of the other things that have been said. For instance, Andrew Breitbart saying, we have all the guns. You know, you've got a pretty toxic mix there, don't you?
Yeah, I would say it would definitely surpass anything that could come from the cauldron in Macbeth, that's for sure. Bubble, bubble, toil and trouble.
I mean, civil wars are nasty enough. When there's civil religious wars?
Well, that's exactly what this sort of thing is leading, and these people are using this type of mentality and this type of rhetoric and projections on illiterate, dumb people. I mean, even the people who are making the speeches, who are supposed to be the so-called leaders, when they talk about France falling in 1941 and other things as well, and of course you've got that idiot Michelle Bachmann who doesn't even know the difference between a U-boat and a U-2 boat or a car boat or whatever. I mean, as far as she's concerned, it could have been done by anything that floats, even something out of Gilligan's Island. Nonetheless, that's just the way they think. They're so stupid. They're so dumb. They're just so ignorant. And I don't know who the hell writes their speeches for them. But you know, I can laugh at that. But what I don't laugh at is the people who believe it, because they don't have any knowledge of world history, as you pointed out earlier. They don't have any knowledge of some type of transmogrified definition of right and wrong. They don't.
No, none. And what's more, they are emboldened by their ignorance, Jim.
Well, yeah,
because you've also, you know, another element of the whole scary tableau is the fact that we're talking about people who not only are ignorant but are proud of it, and that gives me the cold chills, because there is a profound anti-intellectual bent in this country.
Yeah, it is, and the rest of the world is looking at this country as. It's to say, what has happened to you people? Are you all going stark raving crazy? I mean, is there some type of gigantic invasion of the body snatchers here?
Well, what was the UK tabloid or magazine or newspaper cover after the second Bush presidency plebiscite? How can 54 million people be that stupid? They weren't kidding.
No, I wasn't kidding either when it happened.
That's along about the time that I started saying that elections in this country are IQ tests. And in 2004, we failed. And when you look at these know-nothing demagogues like Rick Santorum and, to a certain extent, Willard Romney, it becomes mind-bending just to contemplate it.
The whole catalog of those men and what they say to each other and what they said on public television and how delicately they're handled by some of the people on the major networks is just... I mean, why doesn't someone just say... Isn't this just stupidly wooden or woodenly stupid?
Well, consider the next the Repiglican pageant is going to be apparently on CNN. I just happened to notice today, and the whole darn thing is sponsored by, get this, the American Petroleum Institute, the API. Now...
Well, you can imagine how they're going to handle those people.
Well, how can that even fall remotely within the realm of anything you or I would recognize as journalistic ethics?
Well, it simply doesn't. It's just these people are hacks.
I mean, that's like having a debate on going to war with Iran brought to you by Northrop Grumman.
Yeah, these guys are paying these guys, these commentator salaries, or their corporate masters, and you know they're going to say what they're paid to say, and to treat these idiots with respect and approbation. That's exactly what they're doing. We're not getting any type of accurate reportage or any type of...
No, I mean, why not call this next CNN pageant the Keystone XL pageant?
Well, you can call it anything.
Because that's what, I mean, that's what it's going to be about.
Well, I know what to call it, but I'm not going to say so in the air. But, I mean, you know exactly what I'm thinking, probably. And it's just not... It's just a basically dog and pony show. And this business that he made about stewardship of the land. Well, you know, I'd like to know what his operational, I know what his operational definition of stewardship of the land is. And that is to simply take all the land controlled by the Bureau of Land Management and put it in the hands of the private sector and have them ruin it. And take everything they can out of it and leave nothing behind. I mean, that's the reason that people like Teddy Roosevelt envisioned having protected land.
Right.
I mean, that's exactly what he did.
Because left to its own devices, the profiteers
would just ruin it and leave it behind with nothing left.
And just make a complete wreck of it all. For what, Jim? For profit. For fleeting transitory profit.
Little well, with them, you know, there is no God but profit. And these people are, not to try to make a pun, are its profit.
Yeah, that's why I refer to the blood-soaked altar of unholy profit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just...
And we here in central Appalachia, West Virginia, eastern Kentucky, Virginia, Tennessee, you know, we're laid on that altar. And it's not like some sacrificial victim of a distant culture that, because of the nature of the society, marched proudly up the pyramid stairs because they knew that it was that they were supporting the... And no, whether it's 11 people on an oil platform or the thousands that have gotten cancer and birth defects and various and sundry heart and lung disorders, they were laid unwillingly back across that altar, Jim.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it would make the Aztecs proud and some of the stuff they pull on the tops of their sacrificial pyramids, you know? It's amazing. And the way they describe the Environmental Protection Agency as being some type of, what do they call it?
Radical Islamic environmental policies. Now, granted, the Hogan Goober, or whatever his name was, later said that you know, she misspoke. But I don't think she did, Jim.
Oh, I don't think so either. I mean, you know, basically, she just basically told the truth and, you know, just happened to let how she was really thinking slip out. Don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, their minds are so wrapped around all their motives that they simply can't even tell a good lie anymore. And I'll guarantee you, they will precipitate some type of international crisis, whether it's hostage taking or whatever, that they hope will be a repeat of what happened to Carter in 1979. I really believe that. Something will come up to discredit the current administration and Democrats and anybody who does not agree with them to say, well, look, we told you so. It'll be kind of like another pretense, like, well, the Nazis used to invade Poland, you know? I think there were 21 separate border instances in 1939 that precipitated the onset of World War II. And they're reading from the same playbook that, you know, Heydrich and all those people who helped engineer those things on the Polish border. They're going to try something like that again. Here again is to look into history. And these people have no concept of history. They have no knowledge of history.
And yet what's mind-boggling out of that possibility, Jim, is the fact that they've just spent 4 years screaming, we're broke, we can't afford anything in America. But just give them a nice, bright, shiny, blood-soaked new war, and they're going to forget we're broke, aren't they?
I always do. Because it's basically a rich man's war and a poor man's fight, and they're going to use anything they can as war profiteers to further enrich their own interest in bank accounts and wherever they may be, whether it's in Switzerland or Cayman Islands or wherever. You know, they're not going to even pay taxes. I mean, you know, war is a very profitable thing for certain people. It's not too profitable for the guy who has to fight it, or the guy who has to lay down his life or lose an arm and a leg or have his brain injured by TBI or something like that. They don't care about these people. And the thing about it is they make such a pretense about caring about veterans and things like that. They don't give a rip about these people who have laid down their lives and their futures. They just use it as a way to engineer this jingoistic philosophy they have. You know, whether it's raping the land or whether it's raping another person's country or the destruction of other human beings, they don't care. They don't have any conscience as far as I'm concerned. And I've long since learned to have to live with that because I know I've seen it in action. I really have. It's horrible. And like I said before, history is not linear, it's cyclical. And I keep saying that over again. I know people are tired of hearing it, but.
And the worm turns.
It is ever so true, Bob. It really is. And, as far as the rhetoric this guy Santorum is, going on with, and his theocratic monologues,
you know what's interesting out of this, though? I saw a story over the weekend, and it was an anonymous right-wing Republican senator. And I'm sorry, but I forget who sent it to me. But oh, I know who it was. It was Mike in Pennsylvania. Sent it along and said, Bob, he said, your prophetic qualities may yet be proven out, because what it was a right-wing senator unwilling to go on the record but saying that if Romney doesn't win Michigan, that they have to reconsider him as a candidate. And the person asking him the question said, well, how about Santorum? He said, we'd lose 35 states. Same thing with Gingrich. We got to get rid of a lot of them and bring in Jeb Bush. So that's still floating around out there in the ether or whatever the gaseous, noxious sewage comes off of the Republican cesspool.
Oh yeah, the governor of Florida,
the former Florida governor, W's baby brother.
Yeah, the former governor of Florida. I'm sure they would love to see that, wouldn't they?
Well, wouldn't that be fun if they spent all of their time running these weirdos around, and then they got to their little convention in early September and said, "Nah, we changed our minds, and here's Jeb Bush, and nobody's really had a chance to attack him or think he's a creepy weirdo. Here's your nominee."
Yeah, makes sense. You know, another type of Manchurian candidate.
Precisely.
That's exactly what it is, and that's exactly what I've been thinking about, sort of.
Well, that would be an October. Well, it would be a September surprise in its own right, wouldn't it, Jim?
Yeah, it would. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, well,
you spent your entire campaign season planning to run against primarily Willard Romney, but you know, maybe a weirdo, a religiously insane weirdo like Rick Santorum, or possibly just a loopy Ayn Randian like Ron Paul. And then out of nowhere, here comes Jeb Bush, and you don't have a clue.
Oh, yeah, the man on the so-called white horse, and all this has been just a sub rosa type of stratagem by which he can, you know, be called in the convention by acclamation.
Right, and this somnolent American public in that election season, Bush, Bush, where have I heard that name before? Bush, wasn't his daddy a second world? Because the American electorate is, you know, atne ute aitbre, if you know what I mean.
I do.
A lot of people said, yeah, Bob, that couldn't happen because, well, you know, the Bush name is still toxic. Bull. What, were we 2 full years into the Obama administration before the billboards started popping up in various locations in this country that showed a picture of dim leaders saying, miss me yet?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
And you know what? If we had had, if the unemployment rate had been 0.1%, if the economy had been just hot enough to roast chestnuts, if we had, if the foreclosure crisis had never happened, if there had been total success on every front by Mr. Obama, you know what? That billboard would have still gone up.
Oh, yeah.
Because at the bottom line, it is inescapable that about 99% of right-wing Republicans' objection to Barack Obama is the shade of his skin. If the guy had an R after his name and was and was being sweet and kind and decent to Wall Street the way that, obsequious to Wall Street the way Obama has, they'd swear he was the second coming of Ronald Reagan.
Look, I've said before on this program, and I'll say it again, they just cannot stand the idea of a black man being in the White House.
No.
It's just against every fiber of their being. They just don't like the fact that they've got a man who has black skin and whose hair is not like theirs. I mean, it's the old race card being played again, and, you know, they, of course, they can't admit it. And they have these token candidates like that idiot Herman Cain and some of these other apologists. But I still personally think that that is something that they just simply can't get out of their heads.
Yeah.
This is a race thing. They don't like the idea of a black man.
In their White House?
Yeah. I mean, only a white man can be in the White House. Didn't you know that? And that's the way they feel.
Well, and when you factor in the teabaggers, preferably with either a coonskin cap or a powdered wig.
Well, I don't know about a powdered wig or a coonskin cap, but God almighty. I mean, I just don't understand how they cannot accept a man for, well, I think you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I do. Right. And it does. It comes might not rendering you speechless, doesn't it?
I'm just gobsmacked, totally, if people can be so illiterate and so stupid and so filled with prejudice still.
And well, you're the one that says there are some things that only cemeteries cure.
Well, that's what Clemenceau once said. And he said, yeah, there's some, and Khrushchev said it too. Well, Clemenceau said that cemeteries are filled with indispensable people, and Khrushchev said, well, there's certain mistakes that only the grave will correct. And, you know, but I don't even know if that's going to be because they pass it down to their children.
And that's the question. Does it, you know, is there a watering? Are we seeing a watering down of some of that basic hatefulness?
No, they don't. That's the reason they don't want to have public schools. That's the reason they want to go to all these charter schools and these schools that are basically driven by theology and not fact and not reason. They want to keep that stuff alive. That's exactly what they're doing. That's what they want. I mean, they want to destroy the public school system in America. They want to infiltrate it with all types of block grants that are going to be able to give their money to charter schools and these quasi-religious institutions that I underline the quasi, because I don't think they really teach a lot of love and compassion and respect and decency. I think what they try to teach is their own lack of compassion and their own prejudices. I mean, we have a long way to go in this country before we'll ever overcome any type of racial discrimination. We really do. And they despise the fact that there were certain inroads made back in the 60s toward the ending of racial discrimination. They really have never gotten over that. And this is basically, it conforms along the border lines of the former 11 Confederate states, don't you think? Or am I all wrong?
No. It is. It's the old Confederacy, but you've also got to add in Oklahoma. You've got to add in Idaho. You've got to add in Nevada. You've got to add in Arizona. You know, Arizona is a little petri dish now, as noted on this program, for finding out just how hateful this country can become.
Well, yeah, sure did. Sure is. Boy, Arizona got its headline today, didn't it?
Oh, you mean the right wing teabag and darling? The sheriff?
Yeah, the sheriff. I mean, what in the hell was that all about?
Oh, that broke on Saturday, and I've been giggling since. What's his name? Paul Bapu? The right wing wanna, you know, we gotta protect America from the Mexicans and our forefathers with the Constitution where it says under God and all of that craziness. And lo and behold, it comes out and that he's got a little undocumented immigrant rent boy Mexican lover who done released him some photographs.
Oh my.
Yeah, and said that he had been the sheriff had threatened him with deportation if he ever made those photographs public.
I'll bet in reality that sheriff probably has a hole in the sand out there somewhere waiting on that guy.
Well, I wouldn't be. Yeah, I would stay. If I were the young man, I would go into hiding and stay off of small aircraft. But the best part, the precious part, Jim, was the explanation by a press flack for this right wing Republican, Paul Bapu, or Bapu, or. It's B-A-P, or P-A-B-E-U, something like that. I mean, he's a real darling of the of the teabaggers. Okay. The press spokesperson, rather than saying the photographs were taken out of context, because you know you really don't want the context in this case.
Taken out of context.
No, instead of saying that, which is their usual, or misspoke, which is another of their usuals, said, well, these photographs were real, but they were never intended for public consumption.
Well, I guess not.
Reckon?
Just, never taken for public consumption. Are these photographs, have they been made available in any way, I wonder?
Some.
I'll bet they are a sketch.
One of them, if I understood it, if I saw it correctly, showed like, you know how the flash goes off in the mirror and there's one person, but you know, they're just standing there and they're all buff and purdy together with their shirts off?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Paul Bapu is his name. B-A-B-E-U. And, The way the news article I'm looking at says, he built a reputation as a rising conservative star by taking a hardline stance. See? You know that god of irony I was talking about, Jim?
I do, yeah.
By taking a hardline stance against illegal immigration, attacking the Obama administration, and appearing alongside Senator John Grumpy McCain in a 2010 re-election ad in which McCain urged federal officials to just complete the danged fence.
Well, I understand that where he met this guy was on the Internet, and one of the pictures that he sent in advertising his largesse, for lack of a better term, was a picture of him with McCain.
Oh, yeah. And another one of these pictures shows him and the young man's face is blotted out with his arm around him, Then I'm, it's, yeah, I mean, it just, it, is what it is. But the whole thing forced him to publicly confirm that he's gay and that he was involved in a relationship with a Mexican immigrant. But he denies that he ever threatened to have him deported if he revealed the relationship.
Well, I just wonder what type of relationship or some type of command relationship this man is going to have with his deputies and things like that if they are so abundantly heterosexual. And
he was also Mitt Romney's state campaign co-chair.
Oh, boy, that's something else, isn't it?
And he made robocalls for Romney in Iowa attacking Rick Perry. Longtime Arizona Republican political consultant Sean Noble has said there is no question that his budding congressional campaign is over. Because it is a Republican primary in a conservative district, it's likely that the thing that hurts him the most is that he was in a gay relationship. But now he's an advocate for gay rights, now that he's out of the closet.
I wonder why.
Because all of a sudden it was his ox getting gored.
Yeah. It's just amazing what these people do once they're outed like that. And for him to be so stupid as to go on the internet, I mean, if he had such a bright political future that he had to wear sunglasses, now he gets on the internet and advertises for companion and affection.
And the photographs in question, Jim, let's see, there was one of him and of the young man and Babu embracing. There was also a cell phone self-portrait of Mr. Babu smiling in his underwear, which is grammatically challenging as much as physically. Sorry.
My God, I mean,
and as the report says, and another of what appears to be the shirtless sheriff in a bathroom posted on a gay dating website.
My God, I'd just as soon have a date with a goat or the late Earl of Muffington, as W.C. Fields used to say.
God bless W.C. Fields.
I mean, these people are so horribly unattractive and just so messed up mentally. I can't imagine anybody in their right mind wishing to conclude any type of relationship, however tangential, with any of them. You know, I mean, have they no taste? Have they no sense of beauty or whatever? And I don't want to get up on that, but I mean, you know, these bloody hypocrites are just incredible to me. You know, I am what I am, and I've never made any pretense otherwise on this program. Never. You know that.
Yes.
And I've always believed that honesty is the best policy. You are what you are.
Oh, look, the closet is a toxic place.
It, you don't have to pretend like you're something else and be something else, you know. These people like that, I mean, they're just so really so messed up mentally, physically, psychologically, and we've talked about that before on previous editions of your show. But I just don't understand people like that.
Well, David in Tennessee noting something, he said, at the press conference where Sheriff Babu denied everything except his gayness, he went on to say, and my personal life is none of anybody's business. And David in Tennessee says, fine, that's pretty good by me. But Fox News has yet to use Barney Frank descriptors for the good sheriff. Imagine that, asshats. And he said, from the photographic evidence, it looks like the good sheriff was always, always doing his best part to be a part of the village people, just saying.
Well, that's a slam on the village people because they were very attractive in their own way back in the 80s, as I remember. I mean, they at least they were not unpleasant to look at, you know? And they certainly weren't being dishonest about where they were coming from.
No, no. I mean, when you've got in the Navy and YMCA going for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nobody, it's not like the message was subtle, Jim.
No. And remember from our dear friend, what's his name? Bruno when he went to the sex aversion therapist and who said that he should not listen to Sinead O'Connor or the Village People.
Yes. You know, the thing I love about the Village People now, and this does mark cultural change, you can get a bunch of rough and rowdy beer-drinking rednecks now on karaoke night down to the Dewdrop Inn. And they'll play, and they'll do the karaoke of YMCA, and you will have a whole bunch of heterosexual, presumably, redneck fellers sitting there just doing the YMCA, you know, arm, to beat the band. So I guess change does come slowly in America, but it does happen. What's that phrase you use? It grinds exceeding fine?
Yeah, the mills of the gods grind slowly but exceedingly fine. But, you know, hey, you know, there are a lot of gay groups out there. That's one of the reasons I wanted you to play that thing the other night from Erasure by Andy Bell.
And bless his heart, Ron did find some of it.
Yeah. And, you know, they're a good group. I mean, I saw those guys in Manchester back in 1994. They put on a damn good show, and there was a lot of message in their music, just as some of the stuff that you play, except it was in a different mode, a different type of syncopation and beat, but nonetheless, you know, there it is. But I've taken up too much of your time, and I don't like people who do that, because there are other people who have a lot more to offer than I do.
Well, you've done fine, Jim. You've done fine.
But anyway, have a good show, and all my best to your sibling, your children as they undergo their removal of their wisdom teeth, and that's about it.
All right. Take care, Jim.
All right. Good night, Bob.
Bye now. And a reminder coming in from Kathy in Arizona. She says, you know, there are some there is at least one good sheriff in Arizona, Pima County Sheriff Clarence Dupnick, who actually had the courage to deliver a bit of a jeremiad against Rush Limbaugh once upon a time, back after the Tucson shooting. Limbaugh attacks people, angers them against government, angers them against elected officials, and that kind of behavior, in my opinion, is not without consequences. And, of course, he's right, and he was roundly excoriated for pointing out that right-wing talkers put poison in the body politic and then expect to walk away and say, well, you know, who knew he was crazy? David in Tennessee, in regard to what Jim said about war being profitable, really? War's profitable for the right entity? Damn right it is. To wit, I offer, how many rich Hitler heirs are there? Easy answer. Zip. On the other hand, how many rich Krupp heirs are there? Well, you can't swing an empty liter Hefeweizen bottle in Germany without hitting a rich Krupp heir. Resting my case, says David in Tennessee. And it's true. Like I said, it blew my mind the first time. And I guess, what, was Otis Elevator, or one of the great American elevator companies, bought by, Tyson Krupp? Because you see an awful lot of Tyson Krupp elevators here in the U.S. now, where you used to see the Otis name. And yes, it's those Tysons, T-H-Y-S-S-E-N, if I'm mispronouncing. You know, Hitler's angel. The guy that did business with Brown Brothers Harriman. You know, with Prescott Bush, George H.W. Bush's daddy, who got busted in 1943 under the Trading with the Enemies Act. Exactly. Mike, God help me, in Texas, who wrote at the beginning of the program, said, what it is, it's the fact that all Republicans cannot stand to have a black man in their lily-white house, Bob. He says, good show tonight. Thanks. Thanks, Mike. Thanks very kindly. And we are moving slowly toward meeting Jason's challenge for the evening. Not that far away at all now. Not that far away at all. About six more $10 contributions, and we will have gotten to where we need to be. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, what's going on, Bob?
What's happening, Spike?
Well, beginning of the hour, I heard you talking about a little bit of gunplay, so to speak. And I just had to kind of call in on some of the things you were talking about. and particularly about the one in the chamber, even when the magazine's out. That's so many semi-autos still have that, and it's funny, the few that actually have designed where if the magazine is dropped, then even if it's chambered, it won't fire. In the gun magazines, the right-wingers in these magazines cry never-endingly about how that's even more dangerous. Does that make sense to you?
No, I feel like I'm on drugs. I mean, I handle firearms. I will not, well, I have, but generally speaking, I will not own a firearm that does not have a safety on it and that will fire with the clip out and one still in the chamber. Because, you know, I've got very emotional reasons for being that way.
Yeah. Well, my sidearm will still fire with one in the chamber, so that's why I have to be careful with it.
Well, I've had those. I used to have a little .45 that would fit in the palm of my hand, and it was 6+1. And, yeah, if you had one in the chamber and one out, and there was no safety on it, the safety on it was 22 pounds of trigger pull. You had to really, really mean to.
Yeah. Well, mine has it has the trigger like the Glock and a lot of these polymer ones now, but it also has the back strap lever like on the old 1911s.
Yeah.
So you have to at least be holding it in your hand or something very similar to that to have the right combination for the two things to engage. But in the, like Glocks are like the absolute ridiculously worse because their trigger alone.
Well, right. And like in the case of this poor young woman in Florida, where could she possibly have felt more safe, Spike?
Than in church.
Than in her daddy's church.
Yeah.
Okay, because daddy is the preacher there.
Right. You would think firearms should be somewhat, they shouldn't even have to require it being off limits. It's like just common sense, you should be off limits. But the fear, the culture of fear they've created in their publications, I mean, actually their argument against
But Spike, who's going to come in brandishing a weapon at the church? The liberals? The Muslims?
Well, I get
liberal Muslims?
Abortion doctor. I guess if you have an abortion doctor in your church, then you have it coming. In the world of O'Reilly. Because, you know, that did happen there. But, you know, they're just so spoon-fed on a culture of fear. I mean, the argument about, you know, you should still be able to fire one in the chamber even if your magazine gets dropped. Their argument is, well, what if you get in a struggle with someone and the magazine gets dropped out? Well, wouldn't that be good? Because then if they get your gun, they're not shooting you with it until they can get their hands on that magazine.
There goes that logic.
Yeah. Yeah, silly me. I put more than three-quarters of a second of thought into that one. I certainly would love for a way to disable it so if someone's getting it out of my hand, it's going to be useless in their hand. But whatever. And for that matter, the gun magazines are loaded with sucker phenomenal ads. The ridiculous, you know, the...
See, I read gun, I'll be down at the drugstore or whatever, and I'll pick up a copy of Guns and Ammo or, American Shooter or whatever the hell it is that's in, and read about the latest Sig or the latest Walther or what. I confess, I look at the gun porn. I'm sorry.
How many times have you seen ads for these gold coin scam ads?
Every other page.
Every different. Is it not just one company that makes gun magazines? All of them have these cockamamie bogus. You know,
and half of them aren't even real money. The
right.
Commemorative gold plaid palladium Ronald Reagan Freedom Dollar.
From the Marianas Islands, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Never in use.
And the molds from which this was struck have been destroyed. There will be no more. Order now.
And everything comes with a certificate of authenticity.
Right, because they got some dude making 95 cents an hour signing certificates of authenticity for 8 hours or 10 or 12 a day.
Yeah, it's his second job after he's done doing the robo-sign-ins for the illegal foreclosures around the country. Those magazines often are loaded with such baloney, let alone their political stuff. Once they start getting political, oh, that's even better idiot masterpiece theater, or is it really idiot masturbation theater? I'm not sure. Lots of self-gratification in what they say in these public. And if you think the gun ones are bad, actually, as I might add, as, with their rhetoric and politics, the law enforcement publications, some of them are even more over the top in the stuff that they print and say. You would think that, you know, Obama is going to kill, imprison every cop and take everyone's guns away as his master plan to turn us all into Muslim, Nazi, fascists, communists. It's actually kind of scary. Some of the letters to the editor of one law enforcement publication I get, it sounds more like the callers to the Michael Savage show.
Well, you're talking about roughly the same demographic group, Spike.
Yeah.
Or in this case, psychographic.
For many, yeah. I mean, in particular, the Southern sheriff's deputies who seem to always be the most radicalized groups in law enforcement. I mean, there's Northerners who are out there too, but it seems often the craziest of the crazies in law enforcement tend to say that they're a sheriff's deputy in Tennessee or South Carolina or Alabama, you know, the typical, you know, Texas, you know, the usual suspects of questionable places in this country, Mississippi. But here's the other one you mentioned, was the course in South Carolina, my favorite state to rip on, because I used to work for an ARCA team based out of state, and I can tell you just from dealing with some of the locals on my own team, lots of backward thinking going on there. Those were people I actually had a friendly dealing with, and they were pretty backward.
Yeah, not including pals of ours like David in South Carolina or liberal in South Carolina. No, they're down there fighting the good fight behind the cornbread curtain, and you obviously have an appreciation for what an uphill battle that is.
Yeah, well, for that matter, actually, the head of the Liberal Gun Club is from South Carolina also, and regularly kind of jokes how he's really in the minority down there. Yeah, that's a real uphill battle. I mean, at least Pennsylvania, this side of the Commonwealth, there's a lot of reasonable people. It's those dingbats in the central part of the state who think Pat Toomey is a reasonable candidate that are the scary.
Oh, yeah, what was the phrase that was used on the program the other night? Pennsyltucky?
Yeah, well, central Pennsylvania certainly fits that bill, yeah. Yeah. And even western Pennsylvania, where they voted for the frothy one when he was really a resident of the Commonwealth of Virginia. His children going the
right
full time there and all that. And he, by the way, in fact, very little has ever been spoken. His listed address while he was senator at one point had tenants living in it while he was still senator, which meant he literally could not even live there. But yet he was claiming the address, and because it's, for whatever reason, just no one ever gets busted on this election front. It goes on at all levels, not even federal candidates. Yeah, when I lived in Easton, there was a Republican running for mayor who really didn't live in the city, but since he owned rental properties in the city, he claimed one as his residence and ran for mayor. And the other candidate knew it and would make reference to it in debates, but they still, you know, it's hard to prove and disprove if someone really lives there. I don't know.
Well, and the media, the 1% for-profit media, Spike, are complicit in this too, because they won't raise that as an issue. He is persistently, for instance, the frothy one, tonight's subject of More and Monday, is persistently referred to as former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum. And Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania, that man hasn't been of Pennsylvania for the last 15 years.
Very little of his life was ever in Pennsylvania. He was born in Winchester, Virginia, in the Commonwealth of Virginia. He lives again in the Commonwealth of Virginia. He lived in your state at one point, in West Virginia.
Huh?
I think when he was a teenager at one point, he briefly lived in West Virginia. He basically only in his 20s and maybe into his early 30s, he was really in Pennsylvania. I think he might have graduated high school and then vanished again from Pennsylvania for a little while. That's why when you listen to him come to the Pennsylvania campaign, every story is about his grandfather, because his grandfather actually lived in western Pennsylvania.
Right, that was the only connection he ever had with Pennsylvania.
Right, it's like Hillary Clinton with Scranton, Pennsylvania. When she comes to Scranton, all she's doing is referencing, I can't remember, and I don't even live that far from there. Her father was from there or something like that. You know,
yeah.
you know, or Joe Biden likes to say, yeah, I lived here until I went to college and realized this town stunk and decided I'd rather live in Delaware. Yeah, well, though I'd say arguably Biden probably spent more years of his life.
Right, Biden's got more of an authentic claim to Scranton, Pennsylvania, than the frothy one does to anywhere in the entire state.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for that matter, even Biden even has more of a claim to Pennsylvania because Delaware is really part of the Philadelphia muni market, and therefore he's always at Philadelphia sporting events. So he probably really has spent far more time, a percentage of his life, in the Commonwealth than Santorum ever did. And he's never been an elected official from the Commonwealth. But, you know, there's a piece of me that keeps hoping that, you know, in the primaries of the past few years, the GOP primary voters have shown time and again that the crazy, since only a small portion of Americans actually vote in the primaries for that party, the lunatic fringe of the Tea Party movement somewhat dominates their primaries the past few years, and there's really nothing I would love more than to have them foolishly elect Rick Santorum when their own establishment knows if he wins, they're done. They might as well just wave the white flag. You know, they're going to have such an uphill battle. And even if they do try to pull something,
well, it's like that one.
Else at the last second.
It's like, you know, that one anonymous senator said, Rick Santorum will lose 35 states.
Yeah. Well, for that matter, I believe Rick Smith has mentioned this, that at one point John McCain said that Rick Santorum is the dumbest man he ever met.
Has ever seen in the Senate of the United States. And you know what? In this instance, I'll say that's saying something. Because John McCain is no intellectual heavyweight, my friend.
He's no intellectual heavyweight, and he had Sarah Palin as his running mate in 2008. So you're really dumb. You have to be really, really, really dumb.
Yeah, my friend, I'm John McCain, and I know dumb. Rick Santorum is dumb.
That would be like Chris Christie saying someone is the fattest man he ever met. You know? And as a fat man, I can make those jokes about Chris Christie. And that actually, let me...
And as a big guy myself, I can agree with you.
Before I go, he makes me look thin, and I'm not a small guy. I have to bring up a few things about Chris Christie. The week in the garbage state with Chris Christie. The man who got all the endorsements from the police unions and, you know, even though they're government, and he's saying less government, and the first thing he did was fire him. You know, the only thing I'll give to him, to his credit, as opposed to my governor, is my governor is a bit of a liar, a two-faced. You know, he says one thing, he does another, or he just kind of secretly does things, like take people off the case of Sandusky, things like that. The only thing I'll give to Christie's credit is he's such a jerk, he'll come right out and say he's going to do something, and he does it. Like, the majority of people in New Jersey wanted the bill to pass for same-sex unions. And what's he do? He's, I'm going to veto it. And he does it. But at least he's up front with his douchebaggery. So he vetoes same-sex marriages in New Jersey. And just a few days later, orders all flags in the state of New Jersey at half-staff for Whitney Houston. Now, talk about representing marriage, Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown. I mean, that's nowhere near an abomination compared to if gays were.
No, no, that's the traditional man of marriage of one man and one woman that God had in mind when he first put together Adam and Eve or Steve.
That's right.
Adam and Eve
and a 8-ball of cocaine. That's what marriage is really all about. I know, some people probably say it's too soon to make that sarcastic joke, but I mean, yeah, I mean, and that was all done to take the heat off of him. He thought, I'll do this for Whitney Houston. I'll be the hero by the end of the week. Yeah. How many people a little bit more important than Whitney Houston have died from New Jersey that have not gotten the flag at half staff? I mean, it's just such a ludicrous idea that a person who's really has been irrelevant for 15 years gets the flag at half staff because this is good press while E.T.'s in town and, you know, all these vultures covering the story like nasally bimbo Nancy Grace and, you know.
Has she found the murderer yet? Has she issued her Nancy Grace rock-solid lead pipe cinch guarantee that she knows who killed Whitney Houston?
But maybe it's the same person who killed her fiancé in that fictional death off the cruise ship. Was that the BS story she got called out on eventually?
Yeah.
Carried on about for years?
Yeah.
I just thought only Chris Christie could be that ridiculous over the top where he's going to veto same-sex marriages and just a few days later saying...
That is a beautiful, beautiful observation, Spike.
We should do something for Whitney Houston. It's like, wait, what? What? I think there's more gay people in New Jersey than members of the Whitney Houston.
Yeah, vetoing marriage equity in New Jersey at the same time that you're uplifting the traditional one-man, one-woman marriage model with lowering the flags to half-staff for Whitney.
Yeah, I heard that and I just...
There's that, no, I know, that's the noise.
I thought when I read that at first on Twitter that someone was quoting The Onion. Then again, this seems to be a common problem for me lately because when the Newt Gingrich quote about the moon came up, and my mother said it again, I said, you better find audio of this. This sounds like someone's quoting The Onion as a real news source.
Again.
It's becoming ridiculously scary that more and more real sound bites in the political machine of America sound like they should be coming from Colbert, Stewart, The Onion, and they're actually coming from the horse's mouth, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe in the case of Newt Gingrich, look at the other end.
Well, and again, the same thing, the thing I had on Thursday evening, this story out from the Coal Education Development and Resource Campaign, CEDAR, about the Mission to Mars program where they're teaching little children that being a coal miner is just like being an astronaut. So get your ass in the hole, Johnny.
Are you going to find strange alien beings beneath the earth?
Balrogs.
Like a Wells novel, or is it going to be like Land of the Lost down there? Maybe
Balrogs and Sleestaks. That's all it is for miles once you get far enough down.
Maybe they're like that crazy guy a few years ago who was convincing people that there was a center Earth, and if people would buy him this weird kind of, I don't know what you want to call it. It's a device with big, powerful fans, like a small aircraft that you kind of strap yourself onto, and it propels you up, and then it can propel you forward and back. And he's on the radio, on different radio shows, trying to convince people to give him money because he had a map, which was like from a fictitious novel, about Center Earth, and he was going to go in there and take pictures and come back and show us how the people on Center Earth live.
Yeah, and they probably got little machines that just crank out crude oil 24 hours a day. It's just all little Keebler elves only. Yeah, it's just like the Abyss, only with the hydrocarbons.
and they have giant pipelines going through one country to another to produce oil for China as well, just like here with the XL line. I just wish someone in the complicit yes man corporate media would kind of mention, hey, you know, the BP spill, that was in American waters, and all that oil was going to another country. Like, what makes
not one that was going to go right into our gas pumps?
Yeah.
Was not. See, I done said was not three times. That means it's real.
Yeah. Or, for that matter, the price of oil is going up now and they're trying to blame it on the pipeline. Yeah, no, because it has nothing to do with maybe unrest in the Middle East. Because, in the past decade, we haven't spotted this kind of coincidental phenomenon. And every time there's war somewhere in the Middle East, the speculators...
Yeah, because demand is dropping.
In America, it is. It's not dropping in China. That's the problem.
No. But I mean, I was down to my local gas pump the other day, Spike, and this was on Thursday, and I was tanking up, and in the morning it was $3.59 a gallon, and after showtime it was $3.69 a gallon.
Oh yeah, the price got jacked up real high around here since we have the ski resorts around here. They jacked the prices up. It's expensive for us, but the New Yorkers come here and they think they're getting a bargain because of what they pay out in, New York City and Long Island for gas, which is like ridiculous in so many levels. I'm so glad I still drive every day. My 2001 Toyota Echo, I finally did some work on it to get it back to its premium running condition at 45 miles per gallon highway. Went to Philly and back. I'm about half tank, around 200 and almost 30 miles on the tank, and 10-gallon tank, so I've used 5 gallons. Last summer when I went to Indianapolis for the month of May, I used 15 gallons to get from Mount Pocono to Kokomo, Indiana. I had to stop in Ohio to fill up again. And then once I got to Kokomo, then I even drove the, like, 45 minutes to an hour down to Indianapolis and just past Indianapolis to Speedway, Indiana, and then back to Kokomo. You know, I mean, when you look at how much gas I was using for how far I was driving on that car, I'm so glad I made that $12,000 investment back in the year 2000.
How many miles? How many miles are on it?
I'm closing in on 200,000 right now.
And still just cruising along.
Yeah, it's a Toyota. It'll just keep running forever. Toyota built in the United States. Granted, it was probably, it came from a Maryland assembly line. There's probably a lot of right to work manufacturing going into it. But, you know, it's better than many other vehicles.
Well, that's why you'll never see me for a variety of reasons, you'll never see me in a Mercedes, but that's why you'll never see me in a Mercedes SUV or a BMW SUV, just because they were built by, well, they were built behind the cornbread curtain.
In South Carolina. Oh, yeah.
And Alabama. And the same thing goes with Hyundai. And as good a press as it's getting, no Volkswagen Passats for me either.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I just discovered this recently. I was actually kind of surprised by this. The Fiat 500s are made in Mexico. I guess we shouldn't be surprised someone would be making a car south of the border. It slightly disappoints me because...
Well, you know, not all things Mexican are necessarily to be dismissed out of hand. I got to tell you, one of the things that happened for me over the weekend, I stopped at a grocery store where I was, and I brought back, because, you know, you just can't bring a lot of these back, but I brought back a dozen old-fashioned bottles of Coca-Cola. Glass bottles. And
Coca-Cola and Pepsi, yeah.
Made with sugar and not high fructose corn syrup. Of course, I can't drink the stuff, but I had a teensy, tiny, itsy, bitsy little bit of a nothing sip, and it was it was Coca-Cola, the real thing. It was as if 1985 and new Pepsi-flavored Coke had never happened.
Yeah. When I used to live in Easton, the different Mexican places would carry those. And the funny thing was that they were the reusable bottles, but since they know where they're sending back here, you'd get some of them, and you can tell they were really old. As a matter of fact, some of the Pepsi ones had old logos on it because they just would reuse the bottles forever in Mexico. And I actually have kept a few of them. I have one of those bottles still as a souvenir because you just can't, especially, you know, they do the holiday thing with the Coke in the glass bottles here, even though it's the high fructose ones. But try finding Pepsi in a glass bottle in America. You're going to be really hard-pressed unless you go to a Mexican place. And the best is the apple soda from Mexico in the glass bottles.
Oh, I can't remember what that's called, but that even pops
Mundial,
up here.
I think is,
that even is. Pops up in West Virginia now and then in the international food sections. And yeah. Of course, all of that's off limits to me. If it's not water, I can't drink it.
Yeah. But I mean, obviously there are some good things out of Mexico. It's just slightly disappointing that an Italian car is made in Mexico. I mean,
look,
to come from Italy or at least an Italian American.
Right. If I'm dropping big dollars on a German car, I want that thing to smell like bratwurst when it gets to me.
I knew you were going to say that. You know, although I guess to be honest,
you know, the rusty red pickup truck whose passing I am still lamenting, it was a Dodge. And, you know, you open the thingamajig and the little sticker on the inside of the door, proudly manufactured by Chrysler Motors in Mexico.
Yeah, they were proud of that. Yeah, it made more sense when they were proud of making them in Canada. I don't have problems with things made in Canada. Mainly because at least I know the people in Canada are being well treated fairly in the world of labor compared to third world countries. You know, Canadians like to gripe how bad things are compared to how they used to be, but if they really lived our lives or if they lived the life,
yeah, it's relative by any stretch. Right, it's a relative complaint.
Yeah, I mean, I have to laugh when I see my Canadian friends on the internet complaining about how bad things have gotten in Canada. It's like, you're still like 50 years behind us in bad. Get back to us when you have your Reagan in Ottawa. Then you're catching up to us. Until then, you're doing quite fine. You still have the Jimmy Carter types up there.
Well, and there's still time to back up from the abyss more than anything else. And you know, look what Mexico's doing. One of their national parties for the first time in that nation's history has lo and behold, they are going to put a woman on the ballot for president of Mexico. That's, for Mexico, that's shocking.
That's shocking, and I'm also curious to see if they have campaign ads, what these ads will look like. Just from seeing how women are portrayed in Latin television on the Spanish channels, where everything oozes of sexuality. I guess that somewhat almost raises me to assume that, but I just have this strange feeling there's going to be some heavy sexual overtones in that election if that happens also.
Oh, it'll be full on. I mean, total. Absolutely.
Yeah, or maybe there'll be ads with fat guys in drag. That's also a big thing on Mexican television. I've never quite understood. I guess it's...
Well, I guess we can tell that I'm not up on my Mexican television, but
yeah. I as bad as my Spanish speaking skills are, sometimes those shows on those channels suck me in for a little while because sometimes you really don't even need to know the language to enjoy what you're watching.
Ah, the magic of television. Spike, it's good to hear from you, my friend.
Yeah, same here.
And thanks for the observation about Chris Christie and. I think that's tonight's toaster. That very well may be the toaster.
It's one of the most moronic things I've seen, where in one week you can go from one thing to another so seamlessly without anyone raising any questions.
Exactly. Take care, Spike. Good hearing from you.
Later.
Bye now. And in regard to flying to the center of the earth, email in from Jim. Orcs, Bob! Orcs! Morlocks! Right? And hey, good news, we are only three Thrifty 250 $10 contributions away from meeting Jason's challenge tonight. He is, of course, doubling your contribution. He's matching everything up to $100 that comes in over the course of the show, which, and this is kind of cool, will allow us to enjoy the show tomorrow evening without me saying a blessed word about fundraising. We'll take care of both nights. That's just exciting to me. I'm sorry, it just is. Jim, Mexican makeup on Univision. I don't have it. There's not a chin. No. David in Tennessee. He said, I want to be quoted. Please, Goddess, let Santorum be the nominee. Please. I want that badly. Real bad. And it is. It's one of those things where you say, you know, it couldn't get any funner. But I swear, call me paranoid, crazy, off my meds, whatever. I just don't think that the power structure inside the party is going to let that happen. They will take him out behind the dumpster and install Jeb Bush before they will let him be the no. He doesn't have the mental acumen. To go up against Barack Obama. He makes George W. Bush look like an intellectual. Mm-mm. And because it just... Since this is the frothy edition of Moran Monday... Well, let's go back to where it all kind of began.
Welcome, Senator. You are the leader in the polls this morning, and I have to say you were very busy yesterday. The Associated Press led its story of your appearance in Columbus, Ohio, by saying, quote, Rick Santorum questioned Barack Obama's Christian values. That was after you lashed out at the president's proposal on energy, of all things, when you said this.
It's not about you. It's not about you. It's not about your quality of life. It's not about your jobs. It's about some phony ideal, some phony theology. Oh, not a theology based on the Bible, different theology.
So, Senator, I got to ask you, what in the world were you talking about, sir?
Well, I was talking about the radical environmentalists. That's why I was talking about energy. This idea that
that's me.
That man is here to serve the earth, as opposed to husband its resources and be good stewards of the earth.
See, that's another one of them dog whistling words. Husband the resources and be good stewards. See, he's taken nearly $500,000, if not more, from Consol Energy. Now, they've got an arm that does coal mining. They do deep mining. They do mountaintop removal. It was Consol who poisoned this particular area where I happen to live, where in this little family we are down three gallbladders and one half-rotten pancreas. They do mountaintop removal, these husbands of the resources of the earth, these good stewards that have so handsomely paid the frothy one. Just saying.
I think that is a phony ideal. I don't believe that that's what we're here to do. That man is here to use the resources and use them wisely, to care for the earth, to be a steward of the earth. But we're not here to serve the earth. The earth is not the
straw man much. At what point in time, anybody, even the people who wouldn't pee on Barack, and there's lots of them in this audience, who wouldn't pee on Barack Obama if he was on fire, any of you, go find me that quote where President Barack Obama said, "We are here to serve the earth." I'll be waiting. But it ain't gonna come through. 'Cause he never said that. Now, this is a president who has never, not once, no, never, set foot in a home near a mountaintop removal operation. This is a president who never, no, never, has seen the view out Hell's Gate at Kayford Mountain. This is a president who has the power to order a moratorium on mountaintop removal because of the growing body of science that suggests that mountaintop removal is, as I noted, an unwilling sacrifice forced upon men, women, and little children and babies in the womb, and babies ungotten and undreamt of, that is forced upon them for nothing more than profit. Because I remind you, mountaintop removal yields up less than 5% of the coal that is used for electricity in the United States. It yields up a lot that gets on boats and goes overseas to places like India and Russia and China. And my family, my friends, even the mountaintop removers who are doing this dirty business pay with their lives. The little mountaintop remover children pay with their well-being. They pay with their minds. They pay with the integrity of their circulatory systems. They pay with the ability of their lungs to bring air into their bodies. And at least their daddies get a paycheck for it. But nothing, nothing is offered to those of us who object to being dragged to the altar to have our bodies sacrificed for Rick Santorum's benefactor Consol or Alpha or Arch or Patriot or any of those other filthy outfits. Nothing is offered to us. Well, you just need to be thankful for the coal miner who's keeping you from freezing to death in the dark. That's it. And the President of the United States has not ended it, when it is in fact a human rights crisis. And yet, this moron, Rick Santorum, concocts this goofy-ass strawman argument that Barack Obama says that that Barack Obama is a radical environmentalist. Little Timmy, little Cindy, little Johnny, little Susie, leave the room. Uncle Bob is probably going to start using some very bad language we don't ever want you to use. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This stupid fucker. Where does he get off? Radical environmentalist. No, you stupid piece of shit. I'm a radical human rights activist. That's what I am, you godforsaken numbskull moron. Running around prattling on and on and on about the sacred human life and the little purple lizard that he brought home. Eat me. Take your sacred human life and stick it where the Santorum's good and greasy. Because my human life isn't sacred to him. My son and my daughter's human lives are not sacred to him. My wife's human life is not sacred to this miserable piece of shit. Neither are the human lives of my neighbors, my friends, my colleagues, my fellow hillbillies. We're only useful as long as we can be used to generate profits for his benefactors. Let's go on.
Objective. Man is the objective, and I think a lot of radical environmentalists have it upside down.
Well, how does that translate into some sort of theology that the president's theology is not based on the Bible? I mean, that suggests that he's not a Christian.
No. I wasn't suggesting the president's not a Christian. I accept the fact that the president's a Christian. I just said that when you have a worldview that elevates the earth above man and says that, you know, we can't take those resources because we're going to harm the earth by things that frankly are just not scientifically proven.
I am not going to start screaming because, among other things, my precious little grandchildren are in the house right now, and I don't want to upset them or make them cry. But I've come nigh it several times, listening to that, back up.
I'm suggesting the president's not a Christian. I accept the fact that the president's a Christian. I just said that when you have a worldview that elevates the earth above man and says that, you know, we can't take those resources because we're going to harm the earth by things that frankly are just not scientifically proven.
Listen, shit for brains. There are something on the order of 21 studies now relating to various aspects of mining and mountaintop removal and what it does to human beings and to communities. They were peer-reviewed in science journals, numbnuts. That means they are not questionable science. They're the real kind. Not the kind of science where Adam and Eve ride to church every day on a goddamn dinosaur. This is the real thing. And it is a life or death struggle. And no one's saying, put the earth ahead of human beings. I'm the last one gonna say that. I've said before, and I'll say again, that I don't give two shits worth of a damn about what happens to this planet after there are no humans on it. I just don't. The 6-foot-tall race of sentient genius cockroaches are welcome to run it as they see fit, and it would appear that they're going to be evolving toward that sooner rather than later if jackassed idiots like this get his way. I'm anthropocentric. It's a nasty habit of Western thought, I think. Was it the ancient Greeks who said man is the measure of all things? There was a book, a movie, whatever, a couple of years ago that pointed out that once humankind exits the scene, the earth will begin to recover and get well. I have no fears for this planet post-human. Something will come up. Maybe it'll be a race of three-headed salamander people. I don't know. But my concern right now is for humans. Little, in particular, little hillbilly humans. And for him to offer up cavalier horseshit like what he just did is more than I can stand.
For example, the politicization of the whole global warming debate. I mean, this is just all...
Who the hell politicized it? We didn't! We just picked up the science and said, oh, look, science indicates that we're effing the place where we live and we don't have Mars Base Alpha built yet. Or Moon Base Nudie. We might want to think about that. We didn't politicize it. His benefactors in the hydrocarbon industry did. And that's just a fact. Jay and Barb, now you're talking. Don't sugarcoat it. Cindy, lying fucker. Thank you, Bob. Thank you for telling it like it is. I don't like to... I mean, it's the internet, and I can say that kind of stuff. But I like to be smarter than that. But jumping Jesus on his popsicle stick pony, what... How do you... I mean, this is... On the one hand, you go, well, this guy's dumber than a head in a hog is in the ass. But then you realize, no, he's not. I mean, he may be stupid. I think there's every indication that he is stupid. But stupid left on its own will seek its own level. You know, sort of like the toxic waste inside an abandoned coal mine. But also like that toxic waste inside an abandoned coal mine, it will sooner or later bust out, blow out. And then the stupid gets all over everything. And that's where we find ourselves now. With all respect to Dan Savage and the definition of Santorum that is now the widely accepted definition of Santorum, it needs an element of stupidity in it as well. Because the substance as described by the definition Santorum is actually... Yeah, it might be a little icky, but it's benign. This is not benign. This is Moran with a double side helping of hateful. Politicizing global warming. You know, my god of irony doesn't do lightning bolts. He does rubber chickens and things like that. And I don't know what kind of fitting plague there is to call down from the god of irony upon Rick Santorum. But Jesus, isn't he begging for it?
All an attempt to to centralize power and to give more power to the government. And
yeah, that's what global climate catastrophe is. It's just an attempt to give power to the government. How can something that is neutral as respects any human institution, how can it be an attempt to do anything? Granted, a great deal of climate science does suggest that the causes behind the global, looming global climate catastrophe are anthropogenic, I'm sorry. But even though we're causing the problem, it isn't a commentary on why. That's our job. That's the understanding part. That's the sapiens part of Homo sapiens. The thinking part. Whereas that thinking part in a little weasel-brained misanthrope like Rick Santorum is sadly deficient, and the only thing he can say, I think we can make money off of this. And never gets to that next part of the equation where you start wondering what the money's worth. How much money can you eat? How much money can you drink? He's got a screwed up family that no amount of money will help. He's got at least a child with a genetic disorder that may have been brought on, God knows, by some sort of toxin that his wife or he were exposed to that just sort of rewrote their genetic code on one passionate evening. If you can imagine this man being passionate. Andy noting, yeah, Santorum's out of his mind. In reality, Mr. Obama has put programs in place that a Republican wouldn't think of doing, like opening up all of the Atlantic Coast and Pacific Coast Alaskan islands for offshore drilling, including the Florida beaches, issuing the first nuclear reactor permits in 30 years, among many other giveaways, like lack of standards in the Gulf, deep oil drilling, like delaying more stringent clean air standards. Has Mr. Obama ratcheted back anything that Bush did against the environment? And Bob, by the way, you are an eco-terrorist, man. A terrorist! Just kidding. But you know this is how they want you positioned. Well, it is. Radical environmentalists. You know, next time I hear the radical, fillet me. Because I refuse to be labeled as anything by anybody. I'll do the damned labeling about what I am. Thank you very much. And everything around my advocacy regarding the mountaintop removal and the future of the planet, of which mountaintop removal is a part of the larger debate, for me, turns on human terms. Andy noting, continuing, Mr. Santorum's objective is to bestow massive profits on the fossil fuel and coal industry, his benefactors and corporate funders, regardless of the pain and death endured by the citizenry. Yes, yes. Jude noting Santorum's remark,
I accept the fact that the president is a Christian.
So this is how they treat another Christian? They can't even respect one whom they verbalize is Christian? Dangerous times lie ahead. And he laughs, says Jude, revealing his heart, Bob. Darlene writing in, the irony is, you're not the radical here, Bob. Santorum is the radical. There's nothing radical about wanting a healthful life for yourself and your family and future generations. This is so classic. The radical right projecting their own shit onto everyone else. And they are so sick and twisted and lack such monumental self-awareness that they are clueless about their own hypocrisy. And again, we see the failure of the lamestream media for not calling this piece of crap out on who is being the radical here. Right on, Bob, for telling it like it is. Yeah, because the one thing you'll notice is there's not a whole lot of Bob Schieffer going, none of that. He just says, what did you mean by that? And puts the nickel in and walks away and lets whatever kind of crazy jabberwock he wants to flow out of the mouth of Rick Santorum flow and flow and flow. And we'll be right back after this ad from some great big goddamn corporation that's probably poisoning America. This is CBS. Cindy, passion from Santorum, please, Bob, I'm eating. Let's give Santorum the same thing he gives us, sterility. Take off his nuts. Kim, regarding Santorum froth, I don't think there's a lube out there that is natural to science. Ew. So the froth is contaminated. any minute now, I'll get some email from Ray referring to Bacon Lube. You know, who's funding, for instance, who is funding the Heartland Institute? Yeah, the Heartland Institute is funding the full-on assault on science in the classroom to little children. What the hell difference is there between the Heartland Institute and a child pornographer? They are both perverting childhood. Right? I mean, you know this. 19 public corporations fund the climate-denying think tank Heartland Institute, whose plan is to get into classrooms and start telling lies to little children so that they'll look around and oh, why have I got cancer? Well, because God wanted you to, honey. Oh, let's see. Altria Client Services, Inc. That used to be Philip Morris, Marlboro. Amgen USA. They gave $25,000 to Heartland. Altria gave $90,000. Any Budweiser drinkers, Busch drinkers, Michelob drinkers? They gave $5,000 to the Heartland Institute. I think, well, if I was in the beer drinking mode, I'd find me somebody else. AT&T, $100,000. Branch Banking and Trust, BB&T, $16,105. I'm sure the weird number is accounted for by virtue of the fact that their CEO is an Ayn Rand worshipping weirdo. At one point, I don't know if he was successful or not, but he wanted to bestow $1 million endowment upon Marshall University of Huntington, West Virginia, as long as they would create a department of the study of Ayn Rand's economic theories. Comcast Corporation, $35,000 to the Heartland Institute to lie to children. Diageo, $10,000 to lie to little children. Eli Lilly, $25,000 to lie to little children. General Motors Foundation, $30,000 to lie to little children. GlaxoSmithKline, $50,000 to lie to little children. KCI, $115,000 to lie to little children. LKQ Corporation, $24,500 to lie to little children. Microsoft Corporation, $59,908 to lie to little children. They then said, Bill Gates, people say, well, you know, we were just giving them software licenses. God damn it, you know what? If they want to lie to little children, make them use pens and paper. No sense in letting them have a high technology based on science, because they're lying about science! Nucor Corporation, $502,000. PepsiCo Inc., $5,000 to lie to little children. Pfizer, $130,000 to lie to little children. Reynolds American Inc., $110,000 to lie to little children. Time Warner Cable, $20,000 to lie to little children. XL Group, $35,000 to lie to little children. Right? Yeah.
No, this is not questioning the president's beliefs in Christianity. I'm talking about, you know, the belief that man should be in charge of the earth and should have dominion over it and should be good stewards of it.
I don't want to just spend the whole program on this, but with the use of the word theology, perhaps you could have had a better word than that. I mean, don't you know that?
Yeah. Why don't you go up and lick him real good, Bob? Give him help him out a little bit more. Could you use a better word? What is this, freaking password?
Do you wonder that might lead some people to suggest that you were questioning the president's faith?
Well, no, because I've repeatedly said I don't question the president's faith. I've repeatedly said that I believe the president's Christian. He says he's a Christian.
And then you compared him to Hitler.
I'm talking about his worldview or his the way he approaches problems in this country, and I think they're different than how most people do in America.
Yeah, they're different than those handed. How do most people approach problems in America? Well, I can tell you that on my sojourn southward this past weekend, in a little community where I was, I drove around and saw no small amount of signs that said "Stand Up for Prayer." And I was kind of wondering, is this one of those Sharia law things that they're trying to make everybody down south kneel down and face Mecca or something? No, it's about not being able to pray in the schools. Stand up for prayer. That's how we deal with problems in America. There it is, my bacon lube reference from Ray. I still stick with sentimental agnostic, humanist agnostic, and one of my heroes. Jeanette says, I do care about non-human creatures. I didn't say I don't. But I take an anthropocentric approach to this. Because guess what? If there are no human minds, there is no comprehension of what the planet is like, whether it works, doesn't work, the flames out falling into the sun. There's no point of reference. It's the tree in the forest falling down thing. But Jeanette says, I do care about non-human creatures, especially dogs, and because we are the only species on this rock responsible for the destruction of the home of all the other species. So the way I look at it, if it wasn't for us, they would have a beautiful, unspoiled home. Yes, there are more species I don't like, including cockroaches of all sizes, snakes, mosquitoes, but there are many dogs, cats, horses, bunnies, sheep, cows, squirrels, deer, elephants, birds, which I want to live, even if there are not any people left. Well, wanting them to live, I'm not hostile to it. It's just that we have no reference point for whether it matters or not if there are no humans. You know, I read accounts of archaeological digs and things like that, and how human beings struggled for all of our dancing around the obelisk with the bloody bone problems, how we struggled to be human and to find what Abraham Lincoln called the better nature, the better angels of our nature. And it's inspiring as hell. And to hear that ignorant puke equate that with some sort of weird... How can you be Roman Catholic and Dominionist at the same time? I guess you can. And thank you, everyone. Toward the end of the program, we actually did meet Jason's challenge. You did. I didn't. So we're done with fundraising for the Moran Monday and for Tuesday as well. I ain't saying a word about it tomorrow. We're going to have a funding-free program on Tuesday. Isn't that nice? Thanks for the way that you make all of this happen. Your ideas, your emails, your contributions, your participation in the chat room. It's all wonderful and inspiring. Thank you. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo. Thank you to my head writer, David in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox. And to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, since 2002, almost single-handedly saving progressive radio by keeping it available on the Internet. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Announcement coming soon about a new project there. I think you'll be inspired. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.